We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome on in. This is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast for NFL Week 13. Mario Puig and I are going to be breaking down every game on this week's slate from every fantasy angle, all the toughest lineup decisions, all that good stuff. We're getting into all that. Let's dig in. Welcome on in. This is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast presented by our friends over at No House Advantage. John McKechnie here, joined as always by Mario Puig. We're back to our regular posting schedule after doing a little early record during Thanksgiving week. I don't know about you, Mario, but I just kind of out of muscle memory, I just sat down and started recording a podcast on Thursday morning last week.
You just sleptwalked to the computer and just started recording.
Yeah.
Woke up with a nice 90-minute crisp saved recording in front of you.
Yep. All the above, you know, had the ad reads, had all that good stuff, sharp analysis, just really everything that we had done previously. But yeah, it was completely, you know, through a Walter White fugue state.
You started reading a script that you got that was like seared in your mind back when you got like Harry's razor sampler 6 years ago. Like that was the script that came up.
You wouldn't believe how, like, at the time, like how stoked I was to get some free razors.
Oh God, dude. Yeah. Especially because they're like out of undergrad getting like, an advertiser sending you a disposable razor is like a real high point in your life at that point. Mine too, at that point. Now I can buy my own disposable blades. Yeah.
And I'm still a Harry's, stan basically, but you know that we can discuss more shaving.
I like I like the disposable kind that cuts your face a lot, and that's what I go for instead.
The dollar Bix, those are always money. That's true. It's a very good point. Anywho, speaking of razors, we got a game at Gillette Stadium tonight. Oh, how yes. About that for a transition?
We meant to do that.
Let's do go. That. Yes. Unbelievable. We are.
Oh boy! Folks,
but yes, the New England Patriots, the Gillette gods themselves, are hosting the Buffalo Bills, a team that famously has unkempt facial hair. So let's kind of dive in and see what we can unpack for this one. We've got the Bills checking in as 3.5-point favorites. I think that's down just a touch from earlier in this week.
Yeah.
If memory serves, it was
maybe that it opened at. Sorry, I don't have this right. Yeah, 5.5 rather, and yes. Over under is also down from 45 to 43.5.
So things are moving a little bit. We're maybe the market reflecting a little bit of a lower scoring type of game. One that would in fact that I think favor the Patriots. 3.5 is an interesting number. I saw earlier this week that there was a really high percentage of the betting volume on the Buffalo Bills, but the money was effectively even. So that goes to show that, you know, despite maybe a little bit of less tickets going in on the Patriots, they were bigger overall. than what you were seeing on average from the Buffalo side of things. Going back to last Thursday, obviously both these teams played on Thanksgiving. Love that. It's one of the few times where I can like tip the cap to the schedule maker. Just like, oh, nice. So you like kind of use that to your advantage, having the two teams that played the previous Thursday play the following Thursday. It's good stuff. So no rest advantage or disadvantage for either of these teams. I thought Buffalo, you know, didn't play their best game, but they took care of business. And for New England, obviously they lost, but the offense looked good. Do we believe that going into tonight?
It's hard to believe that the Patriots defense of like the offense of the first 6 weeks could have done that against the Vikings defense. Like the Vikings defense, I think, is limited in the secondary, but they've gotten better results than their personnel would dictate, if only from the pass rush being so good. And the pass rush would have been a perfectly built-in excuse for Mac Jones to have a rough game on Thanksgiving, because they, I don't think, had David Andrews in there. They've been without the left tackle Isaiah Wynn for a while. And Za'Darius Smith, Danielle Hunter, Dalvin Tomlinson is a trio that's caused a lot of problems for a lot of offensive lines this year. So it was set up for Mac Jones to have like another tough game and a decent enough excuse for it. And yet he had a really good game. And I guess you could probably argue should have had better box score yet, depending on how, depending on your theory of how rules, your personal philosophy of how rules should work, whether, you know, they should be enforced as written or not, whether the enforcers of rules should have the license to just reinterpret however they like in that moment. That Hunter Henry play could have been a bit more. And yeah, I think this is at once like a really tough break for the Patriots, both to lose that game and then get the Bills right afterward. And yet this is probably the strongest Mac Jones has looked since whatever, like October of 2021.
Right. So, I mean, I really almost didn't believe what I was seeing on Thursday night with the offense looking the way that it did. As far as New England's personnel for tonight, obviously Damian Harris not going to be suiting up. And it just came across just a few minutes before we sat down here from Ian Rappaport that looks like Trent Brown has been added to the injury report with an illness.
Great. Yeah, I wonder why they would even report that unless he's kind of like trending toward not playing. I don't know why you'd say like, this guy's fine, but just so everyone knows, don't shake his hand or anything.
Yeah, he's got the sniffles, but otherwise he's a...
Yeah, I guess that's kind of concerning, because that is, sorry, is he the right tackle right now? I have to believe he's the right tackle. So that would be, I believe Wynn is already declared out. So if they're without both of their tackles, then at the very least that would, wait, no, could just,
maybe I'm, so yeah, they're dinged up everywhere. So yes, Isaiah Wynn is out, Trent Brown being added to the injury report as questionable, and Yodney Kajust, yes, also questionable, and David Andrews questionable. So this is kind of a tough offensive line setup, if nothing else, for New England.
Yeah, sorry, is Kajust the left tackle right now? Is that what I'm missing here? Because I'm seeing that, yeah, because Nwanu is the right guard, I think. Anyway, sorry, or the left guard, one of the two. So yeah, that's, in any case, even without Von Miller, you don't want to be shuffling your offensive line like this going against Buffalo, because Von Miller, of course, is kind of what kind of takes them over the top, but their front four is still good without him. And Greg Rousseau might be one of the best defensive ends in the league pretty quickly here. You might be able to argue that he's pretty much already there. So him, Ed Oliver, Jordan Phillips, that's already plenty enough to worry about, even if you have a pretty good offensive line, which it seems like the Patriots we'll have something less than that here.
And, you know, piggybacking on the running back situation here, I mean, for one, you know, how much run do we think Ramondre Stevenson gets? And then, you know, this ties in nicely for us and our, you know, own little niche fandoms of the Patriots backfield depth. But do we see one of Pierre Strong or Kevin Harris get into the mix a little bit tonight?
I guess one of them has to play something like, or the two of them combined at least need to play like five snaps at least. Like, it's hard to believe Ramondre Stevenson could really play like 60 snaps in a game, which they might have to. They might have to run 60 snaps. We'll see. I guess Stevenson has the frame, you know, and for 1 week, I guess it wouldn't be the most shocking thing for him to take like some 30 carry workload. But more than the even the carries and the touches specifically, it's like that's just a lot of snaps to be running. It's like you're going to kind of gas him on these many touches that you still need to give him. And yet Pierre Strong has 5 yards on one carry this year, and Kevin Harris has 3 carries for 5 yards in a game like 8 weeks ago. So, yep. And Kevin Harris, the other thing about Kevin Harris is he is an underclassman. So he, I think, like just turned 22. Pierre Strong's like 2 or 3 years older than him. So I would guess Pierre Strong is just on the basis of experience, the one more likely to play behind Stevenson. But I don't know what they're prepared to give him in terms of functions. Like they might just put him out there for 5 snaps to run like decoy. What do you call those, wheel routes or something? Just to like set up a screen to Stevenson on the other side of the field, you know, stuff like that is on the table for these very few snaps. So in a showdown slate, I get, you know, seeking salary relief and chasing one of those two backs. I would say Strong if one of the two, but I think you have to be prepared for a zero or close to it from both.
Yeah, I think so as well. This does kind of set up as the Stevenson show, and you know, for as well as we think Stevenson can do with the workload that he gets, does this kind of steer things towards New England testing things out through the air a little bit more? I mean, Stevenson saw a good share of the targets last week. I think he might have actually led the team in targets against the Vikings, but then we saw Aguilar, chew up about 23% of the targets. Henry and Parker, both in the double digits target share. Jacoby Myers up there as well. So, do we think that the Patriots maybe kind of explore the success that they had last week in the passing game?
Well, I feel like they're already kind of maxing out Stevenson's usage as a pass catcher, and he's getting good returns lately, but those returns are well above his career baseline to this point. So especially since he's not fast, I kind of think he's liable to get some regression there, because he's a guy that especially in the absence of other threats as a defense, you're gonna look at these box scores of the Patriots and be like, oh hey, they're giving like 8.5 targets a game to this running back, and this running back's giving them, you know, 60 yards a pop for that kind of usage. So in the absence of Mac Jones, especially being able to make like a vertical play or otherwise having a speed receiver to kind of give them the yards after the catch, as a defense, you'd be crazy to not apply like the two high principles, the reasons that the two high zone coverage is so effective. You would be crazy to not roll that toward the backfield and try to stay in front of Stevenson there and see what happens when Mac Jones can't get this, you know, 80% catch rate, 6.5 yards per target return. Make Mac Jones do something else, something that, you know, is a lower completion percentage. And to guys that to this point have not given at receiver, have not given the returns that Stevenson has given at running back. And that kind of week to week adjustment, you know, season over season adjustment definitely happens. And so I think that's something that Stevenson's investors and, you know, biggest fans should keep in mind, that like he can be very good even if what he's shown you is the best that he can do. Even if it's all worse from here, he can be a very good player. And I think it's kind of a lot of the analysis now that, you know, especially when you're chasing like hype clicks on Twitter and whatever else, there's a tendency to kind of just declare somebody the next big star over like a 2-game box score, whereas more likely Stevenson's just going to settle in as like a very good, well-rounded back who has the frame to take on a lot of volume and you know, do it well. But the explosiveness in his numbers, I think people should prepare to see kind of like dry up. I think he's going to be a guy that defenses sit on more, and it's going to be still, you know, 78-80% catch rate, but it's going to be like, you know, 5.86 yards a target, not this stuff the past couple weeks where he's giving them like 9-10 yards a target.
Right. Yeah, that just, it's hard to sustain that for most running backs unless you're like an Austin Eckler type. So just bear that in mind. On the Buffalo side, at least for the showdown slate this evening, is Isaiah McKenzie good or bad chalk?
I don't know, man. I mean, he's such a limited player. And again, like, there's so much, there's just like bad analysis and bad, like, ostensible scouting writing out there where people kind of just take like targets per snap and fantasy points per snap, fantasy points per whatever. And they don't really interrogate the conditions, the circumstances that maybe had something to do with those numbers accruing as they did. And in the case of McKenzie, you know, there's some people who just like never watch a snap of football, who look at his box scores and go like, oh boy, he runs like the 4.42 or whatever, and he's got these fantasy points per snap. There's like, these are the people who specifically convince themselves Isaiah McKenzie's better than Gabe Davis because he gets like more targets per snap, and they're just like, ah, targets, targets, that's great. Targets is fantasy. PPR, PPR is the real, you know, PPR is reality. There is no world. There's just PPR scoring. And like, those people look at McKenzie and think like, I don't know, they must picture like a 6'2", 210-pound guy or something, just like making a variety of wide receiver plays. And that's not his game at all. He's a gadget player who catches things close to the line of scrimmage. And from that point, either his yards after the catch ability kicks in, and he has a lot of open field ability in addition to his speed, his open field running ability is like the defining characteristic of McKenzie. But because he's 5'7" and otherwise doesn't have a downfield skill set, if that yards after the catch doesn't kick in, he just isn't giving you anything. And he's not exactly like a sure-handed receiver either. He's not like a guy you can count on for tough catches. So if you leave him underneath and you leave him that room to run, you will pay for it. Because, I mean, at Georgia, he must have had like 8 punt returns for a touchdown or something like
that. Yeah, I mean, they called him the human joystick at Georgia. He was the most exciting non-running
back
that Georgia had for a little bit.
Now, it started with Dante Hall, and then Isaiah McKenzie became it. And after him, who knows? But yeah, that's basically the extent of McKenzie's usage. And in showdown slates, it makes him a good pairing with the Buffalo defense special teams, because if he does return a kick or punt for a touchdown, then you get, you know, twice as much. Or I hope that's how it works. I don't know if I know like the Treylon Burks fumble recovery is no touchdown, but like a kick return on DraftKings, I feel like is a touchdown. And McKenzie can definitely do that, even though I guess it's been a while since he has.
Yeah. So interesting guy, and, you know, good kind of breakdown on him, because I know he's been, you know, trendy in the fantasy Twitter streets of late. Anything else to take a gander at from this game before we head on over to Sunday?
It'll be interesting, I guess, to see, yeah, what Stevenson can do with just like the whole burden falling on him, and he's probably going to be pretty gassed by the end of this one. But yeah, I like the Patriots, kind of like you. I not to speak too much on your behalf, but I think the Patriots defense is really finding its stride, and that, just as importantly, maybe more importantly than anything we've said about this game, Josh Allen's elbow looks screwed up to me. He's not making the right, he's not making the throws like he used to, and he's like straining to make throws that he normally would just kind of make, like, while, you know, just he'd rail gun it through some guy like 30 yards downfield while yawning. And in the Detroit game, he was waiting on that Diggs play over the post over the middle, and he was like bracing to throw this like 20 yard pass, and it didn't even have the zip that it normally did. So I'm concerned that his elbow is screwed up, and I have no idea what his prospects of like improving week to week might be.
No, they should have sent the Bills to Germany, and he could have had one of those crazy procedures done to get the elbow right. But either way, I'm on the Patriots here. I think that this becomes a real, you know, grind it out type of win, or not, maybe not win, but I think they keep this to a field goal or less, which again is right within the spread. So give me the Pats. All right, before we move on over to Sunday, got a quick message from our friends over at Blue Wire.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. All right, Sunday, we'll kick things off here in Atlanta. We got the Steelers facing off against the Falcons. This one, the books are kind of split, which is pretty interesting. At some places, I believe FanDuel, they have the Falcons as a 1.5 point dog. At DraftKings, they have the Steelers as a 1 point dog. So you usually don't see that big of a differential between those two major sports books. Some places will be a little bit different one way or the other, but they tend to be closer in lockstep. So that to me is pretty interesting and makes this one a little bit tougher to get a read on. My initial lean is to go with the Falcons in the points. So if you can find it again, Falcons +1, +1.5, that's my lean here, but the Falcons obviously have not been good at covering basically since week 6. I keep harping on that, but then of course the Steelers, short week, ugly game Monday night against Indianapolis, but you know the defense showed up. But I don't know, like, what do you make of the Steelers right now?
They're not good, but they have a few great players, and the coach I think is the best in the NFL or close to it. So they're dangerous. Even if you're a good team, you have to take the Steelers pretty seriously. I guess I just don't know. I don't know the effect of the short week. At least it's like a Monday, Sunday thing. And not like as short of a week as it could have been. And the Falcons, I don't know. I mean, I think Arthur Smith was doing some good stuff to start the year. It's possible that he's still doing about the best possible that they can do with what they have, but the tricks are getting, you know, figured out, and at the very least they need to come up with something new. It seems to me like it's obvious enough. They need to get Cordarrelle Patterson going as a pass catcher the way they did last year, and I assume that the reason that they haven't is because of structural things, you know, setting up structural details to suit Mariota as an off-tackle rush threat especially. I think there must be something to do with that being at the expense of setting up Cordarrelle Patterson as a pass catcher the way they did last year. But they got to do it, especially without Pitts. Like, why are you turning Cordarrelle Patterson into a rushing specialist anyway? If anything, give him like 5 carries and make all those other snaps be routes. You know, even if he's at wide receiver, like as a wide receiver, Cordarrelle Patterson is probably better than, you know, maybe not Zacchaeus, but whoever the third one is. So Kadarrell Hodge or something, like that. Arthur's got to get his personnel used in the way that suits their abilities, because right now he's not. And the Steelers don't have any such issues. Like they don't have like an inability to answer the question of like, what are we even trying to do here anymore? You know, like they know they got limitations, but it's easy enough to work within them. Whereas the Falcons, they're just kind of like, call a halfback dive with Huntley again. I hope that works. And it's like, it works when you have the defense scared to death of Kyle Pitts, and you establish the off tackle threat with Mariota a couple times, and the defense has to think and wonder before the snap, like, what are they doing here? Are they going to do that? Is the quarterback going to run off tackle again? And then it turns into a Huntley dive and you're not quite ready for it. Like that element of deception is just gone now. And now you just have a collection of like bad players. And so for that reason, I'm kind of leaning toward the Steelers, but yeah, I don't want to make it sound like it's because I think they're good, or even to say that I think Arthur Smith is down for the count. I think generally a guy like him is going to come back with something. I just don't know how quickly he can do it, especially with personnel like this, and especially with no Pitts out there to be the first and second concern of the defense.
And, you know, as far as how the Steelers offense matches up against the Falcons defense, you know, the Falcons pass defense has been a weak point for the bulk of the season. The Steelers obviously have been unable to run the ball against basically anyone that they're going against. I think that the Falcons should be able to kind of shut down that facet of the game for Pittsburgh. But at the same time, you know, even if Pickett is limited as we know him to be, is there enough there with these Steelers pass catchers to where we feel like there could be some success with you know, with Freiermuth, with Pickens, with Deontay Johnson?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Falcons defense is not very good. Like, I know there's some like DVOA or something was saying that their run defense is good, but I don't think it is. It's just like they have a good defensive coordinator, I'll say that. Like, I think Dean Pease is doing a pretty good job, but they just have no talent. And you look at their schedule, it's like, who did they even face who was a good running team? I guess they faced like Penny and Chubb back in week 3 and week 4, but other than that, I don't know. You got
Panthers. Won that game,
right? It's like you got Panthers 2 times, you got the Rams in week 2, you got Saints in week 1. I don't know. I think the Falcons defense, as you look at their box score, it's like A, they've overachieved to some extent, and that's going to dwindle with time as their personnel basically can't be hidden as well. I do worry about – I wish Najee Harris were fully healthy for this game for the Steelers' perspective. I wish he was, because an oblique that keeping him out – or rather, like, an oblique in addition to, especially if his foot is only, like, 90%, it's like that just seems like he can't play. And I definitely subscribe to the idea that Najee Harris is still very clearly the best Steelers running back.
Oh, yeah.
Jalen Warren is going to be back, but I don't really care. I think Warren's totally interchangeable. I still think Anthony McFarland is their best backup running back, so I was kind of glad to see him get some work.
Yeah, but I saw that.
He's only done a pretty good job. I don't understand why it's so hard to get a fast guy who finds the field. Just get on the ball, like just hand on the ball. But
they just their offensive line is so putrid for the most part. It's just like it's hard to get much going when you know that they got 5 turnstiles going.
That's true. And yeah, Pickett is really bad. I guess part of the way that the Falcons could just take this game is from Pickett alone kind of melting down, and I think he's kind of due for that eventually. But he did play well, about as well as he can against the Colts. It's just kind of funny to me because yeah, it occurred to me too when I was watching. I was like, hey, wow, Pickett looks better than he did in the other games. And what box score does he get for you? 160 yards and just like 6.7 yards a pass or something like that. Severely lowered expectations for a first round quarterback when we're like, oh, that's a good job by Pickett. Just he's approaching 200 yards yet again, folks.
And yeah, he's basically getting rookie year Davis Mills narrative, like, oh shucks, look at him do his best.
Yeah,
he's first round
like,
pick.
He's gonna be 25 in like 6 months, and these people are acting like, hey, he's really building something. Like, he's a backup. I'm sorry, but Mariota's a backup too, so yeah. I guess we'll see who sucks the most.
I'm not gonna say what I want to say is the title for this game, but yeah, we'll keep going, but you know what I'm thinking. Anyway, we do have a question from Rollo. Wants to know, they're going to go ahead and scoop the Tennessee defense for the playoffs. Would you drop Kadarius Toney or DPJ?
See, that's tough because I am in team try not to cut Toney if you don't have to, but Donovan Peoples-Jones has done a pretty good job all year, and truly, actually, his whole career, and now he gets Deshaun Watson at quarterback. So
that's exactly what my thinking was. Like, this offense is about to look a lot different. It might not look, you know, perfectly crisp
It would be funny if Watson does like the sex predator version of the Vanderjagt yips, and he like comes back and he just doesn't remember how to play, and, oh. and no one can figure out why. But more likely, evil continues to conquer humanity and run the world, and Deshaun Watson's probably gonna throw for like 20 touchdowns in six games or something.
That's just what we freaking that's what we got. Before we move on over to our next game, we got a message from our friends over at No House Advantage. No House Advantage is changing the game by offering the most dynamic fantasy sports platform available today, playing pick'em contests versus other people for the shot at winning big cash prizes. Download the app, choose a contest, select your player props, earn points for correct picks, and climb the leaderboard for your shot at hundreds of thousands of dollars every week. You can also test your skills versus the house and 20x your entry if you hit all your picks. Bet on up to 5 player prop over-unders or individual player matchups across every major sports league, including NFL, NBA, MLB, PGA, MMA, and NASCAR. Sign up now with promo code NHAWIRE. That's NHAWIRE at nohouseadvantage.com, or download the app on the app stores to get a first deposit match up to $25. Make sure to check out No House Advantage today and experience daily fantasy sports redefined, because it's not just how you play, but also where you play. You won't want to miss out on this. All right, keeping things going here, we've got the Ravens versus the Broncos. Mario, what's going on?
I don't know. I thought that the Ravens would take care of the Jaguars because the Jaguars aren't a good team. And I thought, yeah, sure, Greg Roman's just about the worst ever, but the Jags can't.
Please take the Stanford job, Greg Roman. I am begging you. I will help you pack.
Greg, Stanford needs you. Go help them. Help them, Greg. Save Stanford. I'm only looking out for you and Stanford's interest, Greg.
That's right.
I think, I don't know. I'm actually really sick of talking about the guy. He sucks. I hate his offense so much. I hate him for refusing to change it. I can't help it. So, anyway, I don't know what I can trust the Ravens with. I think it was very little that I trusted them with in the first place. You know, it's not like I didn't put money on, I can't bet in Wisconsin, but if I could have, I wouldn't have put money on the Ravens or anything. I didn't trust them that much. But
I was in Maryland and I did. Whoops.
Oh, man. Well, to be fair, okay, so I know the general narrative here is going to be like the Ravens defense sucks. I don't think that's quite it. I think, you know, Marcus Peters, it was probably ill-conceived depending on him the way they did. If Brandon Stevens is going to be good, it seems like he needs more time still. But more than those two having limitations, that Houston corner that they drafted in the fourth round, he's just no good in my opinion.
Pepe, but, no.
Yeah, so that was a stupid pick. Said so at the time, it was obvious. But I think that game, for the Ravens, as it relates to the Ravens defense, it had more to do with Trevor Lawrence than it had anything to say about the Ravens defense. Because like, I thought that the Jags would blow it because – while I always believe Trevor Lawrence would eventually get to a point where he's, you know, just truly fearsome, I didn't think it would be this week. I thought he needed more help. I thought he needed another year or something to get there. Whereas it seems like at the Ravens' expense, Trevor Lawrence kind of tapped into another level in that game. And
yeah, like
he was that might have, second, yeah,
that might have been, you know, and again, you can never predict the moment. And sometimes it doesn't matter who the opponent is. When a great quarterback arrives, there's just not a whole lot you can do about it.
Yeah, and I think that game might have finally helped the skeptics, the people who didn't believe in Lawrence. I think they can watch that and suddenly see why the truthers had been holding out. It's like he all along has done things that just very few quarterbacks can do, even when he was struggling. So it's like if he starts to iron out the rough parts of his game, he'll just go from kind of like ugly to unstoppable. And not to say he's going to stay there permanently, but the Ravens, they really got the worst of that turn in his development. And such that I don't know if, as much as I'm blaming Roman, you know, I don't know if there was anything the defense could have done about that. Like
well,
the offense should have done more, but the defense, I think, might have been helpless against quarterback play like that.
And there was also a sequence that really kind of turned the game where Duvernay had the ill-advised return. He gets stopped at like the 6-yard line or something. and Gus Edwards gets stripped on his kick. He gets some running room, and the safety perfectly timed strip from behind, rips the ball out, and you know the game turns on its face. Whereas the Ravens could have, you know, had a clock bleeding drive, and that game ends a whole lot differently. But that sequence really was a key component in that one. But as it comes to this game,
so I can't trust them to in 8.5 points.
No, absolutely. God, no way.
I can't trust them with like two.
No. The Panthers game, that I think you can just run that game on the live broadcast and it will look almost the exact same.
Yeah, so I'm picking the Ravens, I guess. Don't get me wrong. I don't have I'm not going to pick. Maybe if it was in Denver, I'd say Hackett gets his win. When are they going to fire this idiot, by the way? I mean, God, how, if they had like, if they were scoring like 18 points per game, they'd be like 6-3 or something. Or sorry, they'd have like some kind of winning record. But because they average like 15 points per game and have like a top five scoring defense, they're still just 3-8. So, yeah, Denver is insanely bad, and I am enjoying watching Greg Dulcich fail. I'm sorry. It's so funny because outside of those two busted coverages, he's just done nothing. And Nate Hackett and George Pettine really were pinning their entire theory of a team on this one former walk-on rookie from UCLA. Very funny. I am eager to see how bad they can make this get. I would like to see you know, the Ravens secondary does screw up assignments, so to be serious, Dulcich is not bad. He could do something here, but until Hackett realizes he can't run whatever his offense is with a quarterback like Russell Wilson, to be fair to Wilson, you know, that's kind of bad coaching. That's not accounting for his limitations. Like, he can't run more than a few plays. So adjust or prepare to watch him, you know, totally just face plant, which he has done almost start to finish every single game this year. And I don't know how you can expect that to change. So I take the Ravens, but I need a defensive touchdown for them to cover. Like, I think Greg Roman is so profoundly hindering to an offense. Even if you had good personnel, but when you're running like 30 routes with DeMarcus Robinson and another 20 to like James Prochet or something, this sucks. This cannot be good. It's going to be bad, even if Greg Roman were good, which he's the opposite of.
So we'll see if Isaiah Likely and Kyle Hamilton can get back this week.
Oh, right. Now Hamilton's hurt. Yeah,
Hamilton missing last week. I think, oddly enough, I've really changed my tune on him over the last month or so. He's really had started to come on.
He's a good rover. He can't run downfield, but just don't put him in that situation.
Yeah, there's use for him if you plug him into the right spot. And, you know, not having him, Marcus Williams, their big free agent signing of the offseason, his wrist injury, him being out, I think is certainly not helpful.
Is he gonna be back soon? He's supposed to be back, isn't he?
Like, yeah, it's getting close. The defense had been playing well before last week, but obviously last week was tough. So I'm taking this one
we might see him pop. I haven't done a search for his name, but he's been practicing for almost a week and a half now. So that would be that would almost explain the spread to me. If they're like, ta-da, Marcus Williams is back, I'd be like, maybe we are going to get that touchdown.
So yeah, give me 20-13 as the final score in this one in favor of the Ravens. So that is an under and the Ravens not covering.
17-10, John, Broncos cover.
All right. So we're in lockstep there. 7-point win. Let's hit on the Bears versus the Packers. The Pack favored by 4.5 to 5.5, depending on what book you're looking at. So that seems to suggest that we're going to have Aaron Rodgers back. I think things have been trending in that direction, and Fields, he might play, but you got to be concerned about, you know, his ability to stay upright for this one with that shoulder injury.
Yeah, that is concerning. I dislocated shoulder. I didn't even realize that was what it was when it first happened. So dislocated shoulder, even if it's on the non-throwing shoulder, especially as a running quarterback, that's tough to manage. So I don't know, the Packers are such screw ups, and going to Chicago, I have to believe, as much as Rodgers has had success there that it's still not where they'd like to be right now. So I don't know what a fair expectation is of the Bears offense, but I will say I would like the Packers offense more if Jordan Love were allowed to play. It's kind of like, I bet if Jordan Love hadn't thrown that touchdown off the bench, that Rodgers would be quicker to be like, I'm hurt, guys. My hand, my thumb, and my ribs are hurting so much. But when he saw Jordan Love had that little bit of success, he was just like, I can't let this happen. So he's going to play, even if he needs to take, like, you know, an almost lethal dose of opiates to withstand the pain. He's going to do it. And he'll probably win. It'll probably be fine. I mean, the Bears defense is a mess. The Packers should be able to lean on the run game if necessary. They should be fine. But yeah, it should be Jordan Love's start.
We're reaching that point. I think, I forget if this was offline or if you had tweeted it. But you know, when it comes to the Packers, you know, the season is lost at this point. And there, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's basically no penalty if they trade him next during the offseason.
If they designate Rodgers as a post June 1st trade, don't ask me why. I don't know why the difference is so much. They save something like $1.5 million on the 2023 cap, and then, you know, quite a lot more each subsequent year. But if they cut him, then they have to eat like $55 million in 2 years. And I have no idea why it's so much of a difference. I don't think it's as simple as like the other team eating the guaranteed money, because I feel like that's something you have to negotiate in the trade terms. I don't see why that would be like a given outcome of a trade. But the Packers do have the ability to trade Rodgers after this year. And I don't know. Maybe that's why the Broncos still haven't fired Hackett. Maybe they're going to try to do it 2 years in a row, have Hackett as a head coach, just to see if they can get Aaron Rodgers in a trade. I don't know. I think the Packers, I don't know. I know Jordan Love is probably still bad, but this is a player, in my opinion, Rodgers, that if they can trade him next offseason, they should really do it. Cause they've already played their hand poorly. If they somehow get like a first round pick or more to do a too late rebuild, that's still better than any alternative they have.
Here's a little bit more food for thought. Do you think that they want to kind of put what Jordan Love did on Sunday just in amber and just not see him the rest of the season and use that as a selling point to move him?
Is he not a free agent after this year? Or is it next year that's the last year? Because they declined the option, I thought.
Okay, true.
But I've lost track of time. I can't even remember how long he's been on the Packers. But I think if they trade Rodgers and if they don't, so it's been 2021, 20, okay, so yeah, they get him for next year either way. I don't know why they would keep it under wraps. You know, I think they're going to hurt Rodgers' trade value by letting him play hurt, and they're going to make it harder on themselves to evaluate Love. But almost every single thing the Packers do from an administrative perspective, I don't understand at all. I don't understand why they keep hiring the defensive coordinators that they do. I don't understand any of their thinking in the draft or free agency. So because it makes less sense to me to force Rodgers on the field hurt for whatever reason, I guess history says that I'm probably the exact opposite of what they're going to do.
Yeah, the defensive coordinator thing, rough.
Barry is just, oh man, it's awful.
They also like can't figure out special teams.
Yeah, LaFleur, I think LaFleur is a really good play caller, and he should be a good coach overall, but he seems downright like delinquent or neglectful or something. Like, he just doesn't pay attention to the defense or the special teams at all. It's like, dude, you really should. You should care about that as a head coach. You should worry about those two other things.
Like, remember when you had a team that probably should have won the Super Bowl last year and you let the San Francisco 49ers block a punt in your house to beat you?
Yeah, that was cool.
Remember that?
But yeah, he's like, it sounds like LaFleur really thinks like, oh, we're fine. Barry's good at this. It's good. It's fine. Not a big deal.
He is not. Figure it out, Packers. All right, let's keep it rolling. We got Lions playing host to the Jaguars. Another game with split action at BetMGM. The Lions are 1-point underdog, and at FanDuel, the Jaguars, a 1-point underdog. I'm totally smitten by what I saw from Trevor Lawrence last week, even if it pains me to see what I saw. Man, I mean, been a huge fan of his since his freshman year at Clemson. He was a legendary recruit. It's not surprising that he's figuring it out. It's kind of amazing, though, that he's doing so with
Sorry to interrupt. We're like 3 weeks removed from David Carr's quarterback rankings of like redrafting the 2021 class, and they have like Lawrence going after Davis Mills, and there's a bunch of dopey analysts who were putting a big like Trevor Lawrence might be pretty bad, you guys. Like, why do these people who have been, they know they've been watching football for less than 5 years, like, why do they keep sticking their necks out like that? Do they not know that they're sticking their neck out when they make these just ridiculous statements about quarterback prospects after insignificant sample evaluation samples? They just want to make these declarations based on like just minuscule data. And so they end up saying ridiculous things like, I can't tell who's better between Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence. It's objectively, it's hard to tell. It's like, well, I could, a lot of it, anybody who turned on the tape could tell you Trevor Lawrence has something these other quarterbacks don't. And it's not easily explained, I'll admit, because he doesn't look like any other quarterback. You know, he's like, he's the first of his type. So you can't point toward some clean bit of tape to make it easily understood. But with Lawrence, it's not so much, he doesn't have like the Josh Allen cannon arm. He has like a very good arm, and it's like, practically speaking, it's very useful because he puts zip on it with like quick release and stuff. So it's like, maybe he can't put the ball through a brick wall like Allen, but he's really good at making like slicing throws, you know, like things that just like cut through the defense, however he needs to do it. And it's hard to put this into words exactly, but he makes these like really ambitious setups to his throws that other quarterbacks can't think of and can't execute, even if they could. And by that, I mean, like, there'll be some throw that can only be made if he gets to like, you know, 4 yards to his left or his right. And given the way that the defense is applying pressure, it's like no one can really get to that spot, but he can, and he can do these just like quick hops and set up a new base to throw and kind of like, he can just set up so quickly and on the run and not just on the run. It's like, there's just, he almost kind of like just teleports to a spot and then makes like a really quick throw that would be entirely impossible with any other quarterback. And I think people are going to see quickly why, you know, he's the one who can actually catch up to guys. Not that he's going to be better than any of them, but he can at least get in the conversation with guys like Mahomes, Allen, Lamar, whoever you consider to be the best quarterbacks otherwise, and Herbert, I meant to say. So yeah, like those three quarterbacks, he's going to be number four soon. Like it might have already happened.
Yes. So my best ball shares, my best ball portfolio is about to be happy as we hit this final stretch.
Threat. We got to get that idiot out of Jacksonville so they can get a non-Marvin Jones receiver on the other side. Like, I know that Calvin Ridley's coming in, but like they got to do better than Zay Jones even still. And Trent Baalke is going to, he's going to waste every pick that they get from this point. The guy's just a menace.
Yeah, death by Zay Jones last week was not that was crazy. That I was expecting.
Did you notice that they've benched Devin Lloyd, who they traded up in the first round to get? Sorry, I'm going on a quick ball here. They traded up to take Devin Lloyd, and now they had to bench him. They had to bench him for a third rounder from Wyoming named Chad Muma, who he could be good. But Devin Lloyd is like a 24-year-old rookie. He's too raw to play. He's old, too old to develop. It's just dust, and then they're bulky. He's just burning these picks up, just setting them aflame.
You know, that's something that, like, you know, the Gruden draft strategy would like shed a tear of happiness to see. Just complete unforced error in the first round. Sign us up.
Unbelievable. Anyway, maybe Trevor can transcend the circumstances. Hopefully, he does.
Perhaps.
In this game, because it's at Detroit, I think Jared Goff could be good goof in this game. He could be the ungoof, and it would be very Trevor, very Jags to have a letdown game here. Now that he might be chalky or something, but it shouldn't happen. He should keep it rolling, and it might be a proper shootout if we get Goff instead of Goof.
Yeah, we get a pretty high number in this one. We're looking at 51.5 over at DraftKings. So, I mean, that I could definitely see this going over because, yeah, I mean, I don't think that the Jaguars defense is...
Jags defense still sucks.
Yeah, exactly. And the Lions at home, they can definitely put up some points. So this should be fun. Any other commentary on this Lions offense beyond the Goff versus Goff?
I should have looked this up. Is Jameson Williams any closer to playing? I know he's in practice.
Right. I'm not sure if he's quite ready to go.
Well, it's going to be interesting. He's just someone to watch. I don't think you want to play him, even if he does show up this year, because the Goff limitation is in effect. But that would be – I'm pretty eager to see him whenever he's ready to go.
Yes, and when they have a quarterback that can throw it down the field, that's going to be – yeah, there's a reason why we were so high on Jameson Williams, you know, pre-injury last year, and why you should still be high on him. Move forward. Let's go on over. We've got the Jets versus the Vikings. Vikes 3-point favorites in this one at home. They, you know, were able to quickly rinse off the shellacking that they took at the hands of the Cowboys and get a win on Thanksgiving night. They play host to a Jets team that made the much needed switch at quarterback. It's not to say that Mike White is the answer, but maybe we know for a fact that Zach Wilson is not. So that's about where I'm at with it. If a little fantasy corner here, we're going all over the place as per usual. But if you played in normal season long, so not best ball, I know that you've mostly moved your assets to the best ball realm. Would you have had any interest in one Zonovan Knight this week on waivers?
No. Granted, I don't know what's going. It's not good for James Robinson that the Jets scratched him in that game. I don't know. It's possible that they did that slightly to keep that pick from turning into a fifth rounder, because there's something like, if James Robinson gets 180 yards, it turns from a sixth to a fifth, and now he's kind of hard-pressed to get there. But the main thing is, Zonovan Knight is just not a serious prospect to me, like the way I look at things. Like, he was a totally good college player, but am I missing a year? He was not a workhorse at North Carolina State, was he? He, like, rotated with Ricky Persons or whatever.
Right. They had kind of a deep rotation, but I thought, you know, both of them, it would have been mismanaged allocations if you're NC State to not play both of them, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's just that if Zonovan Knight is good enough to be actually better than players like Michael Carter and James Robinson, or Ty Johnson for that matter, I need him to displace those other North Carolina State non-prospects more than he did, or I need him to test well athletically, and Knight is both small for a running back and not fast. Like, he might not be properly slow, but for his size, he is. So there's volume limitations. He has no speed, no explosiveness. I don't like shiftiness, I guess, must explain his production, because he's not running anyone over. I don't think there's anything there. Like, Ty Johnson is better than him. Michael Carter is better than him. One game blip in a goofy, non-competitive game doesn't change that for me.
Okay, good to know. I needed a sobering take on that one, but what if I told you?
Wish him luck. It's a kind of fringe prospect. It's easy to root for, but he's more likely to be on a practice squad in a month than starting for the Jets.
Okay, but what if we called him Bam Knight, which I believe was his nickname? Does that change anything for you?
No. I think you got to be either an improbably short and stocky running back or a big fatso, if you want to be like Bam Morris from the...
Yeah, I was about to say, do you remember Bam Morris?
I do remember Bam Morris. Yeah, he is. People loved him because his name was Bam.
Yeah, I knew you would, and that's why I liked him as a kid. I'm like, wow, his name is a Bam. That's sweet. But as it all...
Bam and Slash? Oh, man.
I mean, that was a golden age. But as it all pertains to this game, you know, I think it's easy to draw the parallel when it comes to the Mike White-led Jets, where it's like, okay, he can rise up for one game, kind of sneak attack, and have a good game like the one he did against the Bengals or the one he did against the Bears last week, although the Bears' defense even worse than what the Bengals were rolling with it at that point of last season. Is he able to continue it? Because he obviously, you kind of petered out with that four interception performance later on in 2021. What can he do in this spot? And, you know, the numbers were promising in the box score, but I saw that his average depth of throw was like less than 6 yards at the same time, which helps a guy like Elijah Moore a little bit, but at the same time,
they play him, but they, it was good to see Elijah Moore do what we always had very solid basis for believing he could do if they mm-hmm. gave him the opportunity, which they felt the need to deny him for whatever great reason they have. But even last week, they still were screwing around with Elijah Moore's playing time. Like, he still only played 21 snaps. Denzel Mims played 18. Braxton Berrios, good enough player, whatever. He could be useful for some other team. But they keep jamming Braxton Berrios onto the field and giving him reps that need to go to Moore. Like, I don't care what reason they think they have for this. Like, either Moore is such a malcontent issue that you can't have him active on game day, or he is so much more talented than Berrios that on the basis of merit, Berrios doesn't play anymore. But they're doing this thing where they're like, oh, we just think Berrios is so good, we got to get Berrios the ball. Every single time you give Berrios the ball, you are taking willingly a lesser return than what Moore would give you. You're not good enough as a team to be doing that. You're not half as good as you need to be that arrogant to just say, like, well, we'll just take these, you know, non-competitive reps because we just wanna. Like, they don't even try to justify it. There's no way to justify it. It's just Braxton Berrios is a backup slot receiver. You let him play when your starting guy can't. That's it. When Elijah Moore gets to 45 snaps and needs a breather, put in Berrios. If it's 20 snaps, no. He cannot see the field, or you're risking, at the very least, you know, serious regression from a rep that you can't really afford it, not with the offense like they have. So, yeah, I liked Mike White last week, and he's still way better than Zach Wilson. Like, whatever regression is awaiting him, however harsh it might be, it's always going to be worse with Wilson. But you're right, the low depth of target is concerning. As much as Elijah Moore and Garrett Wilson can give him yardage after the catch, and probably will, the defense is going to notice you're not getting the ball past whatever depth, or that to throw it past whatever depth, you have to make it a duck that easily gets shot out of the sky. Like, those kinds of things they'll see, and they'll start creeping up. They'll start making the field smaller on you from within the parameters that you can actually threaten. And they're not just going to defend the end zone when it's Mike White out there. There's no reason to. So the field is going to get smaller on him, and I do worry about it at that point, because as much as he's a fun player and easy to root for, Mike White was, he had like one pretty good year at Western Kentucky or two, where he was still mm-hmm. well below the standards of like Brandon Doty. Bailey Zappi.
Yep.
So Nelson Fishback, even, or whatever.
Oh, wow.
Nelson, you never forget Nelson Fishback once you do Nelson Fishback projections. And then before that, Mike White was like the QB3 for 3 years at South Florida. So he has no real tools. His production in college wasn't very good. He's better than Zach Wilson right now. And that's all you can really say about him. And it's just not saying much at all.
Yeah. So, but it's a ticking time bomb for when he regresses. Does it happen this week in Minnesota though?
Is it Ed Donatell who's their coordinator? I can't remember. They're doing a pretty good job on defense. Like, looking at their box scores, they've gone up. I almost would have thought this is a Mike Zimmer team. So, specifically because of the defensive backs, not to make Cam Dantzler or Patrick Peterson sound like they're pushovers or something, but like, Peterson had a good 3 years where he was struggling a lot. And this year he's doing a lot better. Cam Dantzler runs like a 4.65, even though he's like 180 pounds at 6'2". But they're getting good results. Some of that's the pass rush. The pass rush speaks for itself. But some of that's got to be pretty decent coaching too. So maybe Donatell... I'm just making him the defensive coordinator in my
okay. That works.
If he's scouting this well, if he's scouting Mike White well, and he's noticing where they're getting Garrett Wilson the ball, he's gonna say, "Hey guys, we're gonna sit on these areas, and we're pretty sure Hunter or Smith is gonna get to Mike White before he can try to pull any shenanigans to get out of it." And I think that's what's going to happen. It's like Mike White's going to see something. He's going to see, dollar signs in his eyes are going to pop out. And there's going to be someone waiting that he doesn't see that's going to jump right in front of it. You worry about a guy like Mike White, pretty aggressive quarterback, I guess you'd say. Like he's pretty fearless, but he doesn't have the throwing velocity. He doesn't have accuracy. There's no reason to think he's good at reading defenses. It could get pretty rough for him here.
Yep. So I in my picks column, I just kind of figured that maybe there's enough on this Jets team, outside of the quarterback, to where even replacement level quarterback play can get a win in this spot. But I'm starting to think that there's the potential for the meltdown spot for Mike White, and therefore the Jets would be cooked in that instance.
I think the Vikings are still in danger too, just because Cousins could have his own meltdown on the other side.
Right.
So I think Mike White can win this game. I just think he's going to have, he's going to be dependent on Wilson getting him yards after the catch for whatever he gets. And there might be 2, 3, 4 ugly turnovers.
Yeah. So I'm concerned about it from both sides. I think that, we're looking at a total at 44.5.
Under.
Yeah, I think this might go under, and I think that
20 to 13 or something like that. I don't know, 20 to 14.
I think a lower scoring game probably favors the Jets. No.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I think every scenario favors the Vikings a little bit, just because Cousins is probably, I'm not a huge Cousins fan or anything, but he's probably a lot better than Mike White, and the Vikings have. The Vikings don't have a defense as good as the Jets, but it's still pretty good. It might be better versus Mike White than the Jets defense versus Cousins. So I think the Vikings have the advantage here. I just don't see how, short of a defensive touchdown or short of, starting a couple drives way deep in Jets territory, I don't know how they really get safe at any point.
Okay. All right. So this one, yeah, could be like a little bit of a back and forth. See, among those early window games, I think I might be the most interested in this one, other than Titans Eagles, which we're going to get to here in a second. But let's hop on over to Commanders Giants. We've got Commanders 2.5-point favorites on the road in this spot against the Giants. I don't think the Giants have played particularly well of late. I think that the regression that we kind of thought was going to happen when they got out to that hot start, it's starting to. I don't think that, a backdoor push against the Cowboys and losing at home by a pretty big margin to the Lions really says that they're going in the right direction necessarily right now. And I don't know. I like the way that the Commanders are playing. Like maybe I'm just a little bit too much Heineke Kool-Aid. Maybe I spent a little bit too much time in the DC area last week, but whatever it is, man, I'm taking Washington in this one, and I'm not really thinking twice about it.
Yeah, I guess if Washington's turn for the recent success has clear causes, I would say it's the defense is playing quite a bit better, and I'm not really sure why. I haven't paid close enough attention to know if they're doing anything differently. Like, I don't know if Jack Del Rio's calling something different, or
if they needed to get saved at the end last week. I'll say that.
Yeah, and it's the offense, the defensive line is the main asset that they have, and so I'm generally going to chalk up any success they have to that. But they have gotten much better results overall. I just think it can't last, especially for defending the pass, because they're starting Kendall Fuller. He's pretty good, I think. I guess I've seen varying takes on how good he is. I think he's all right. Bobby McCain, this other guy that they're starting, and I know St. Juice is going to be back eventually, but I think he's awful. If I was calling an offense, I could get 4 defensive pass interferences a game on that guy. And that's going to be a problem for him eventually, because he's just a tunnel vision chaser at corner. He doesn't know what's going on in the field. And McCain's like a backup free safety slot corner tweener. So I think those guys are going to get beat again. I think they've been hidden this long, but of course, you wouldn't really expect Daniel Jones to be the quarterback to really make them pay for whatever limitations they might have. So, yeah, Washington could keep it going in this game. I obviously don't think Brian Robinson is good. So that he had a good game last week doesn't change anything for me. He basically had the game that I expected him to have against the Texans that he didn't. So I've been planning for this. He still only is at 3.7 yards per carry. And there's a couple fluky runs that got him past 10 yards a couple times. So I still think that's going to keep going downward. And I think defenses are going to notice more and more that he's tipping off various play tendencies with his presence, which actually could be a big problem. It's definitely the Giants defense that I wonder about if they're going to step up and maybe help the Giants offense. Because the Giants offense, it's like if Saquon doesn't do heroics, they don't really have that much going for them. Slayton can make a big play here and there, but he's not a volume guy, even in theory. But I think Wink Martindale could be the kind of guy that the Washington needs to be very careful with here, because as much as I like Heinicke, he is like a bit of a risk taker sometimes. And I meant to say before, the second reason they're getting better is because Heinicke, unlike Wentz, is smart enough to know his limitations. And he knows that the way he limits his negative effect on the game is by just forcing the ball to Terry McLaurin. You just
Good
get
idea.
The ball to the best player. So that's smart on his part. And it's part of why he's better than Wentz. But
do you know offhand if he's been good against the blitz? Because that's obviously know. Like a big Wink Martindale special.
Right. Just the blitz and the disguised coverage. Like he might even get you thinking before the snap that you know what it is and you might feel comfortable even though there's a blitz showing here or there. And it might be like the guy that you thought was blitzing wasn't, and this guy that you thought would be in coverage is blitzing you. And you could figure it out if you had like 4 seconds, but you don't. You have like a second and a half to figure it out, and it's tough to do. And Heinicke is fearless against the blitz, but he's also liable to like make a wrong read and just, you know, let it rip off of it. So it's a dangerous spot. It should be a low scoring game unless special teams or turnovers get wacky. And I'll go with the Giants just because I think Dable's still the real deal. But
sure.
Washington probably has, I don't know, slight personnel edge. There's no McLaurin on the Giants side, basically.
No, I don't really think so either. Let's see here. Before we get on to, oh my God.
John's the internet monster attacked again. I think that's why he was distraught. Sorry, folks. Traditionally, I have to just see if the John feed kicks back in. This might take a moment. Try to get a hold of him. Oh, geez. sorry, folks. The reason John said, oh, dear, at that last second there is his computer restarted on him with no notice. And that's always fun. I'm going to try to talk a little bit about this Titans-Eagles game. I think John might have picked Washington. I don't know. I'll say the Giants, but I'm not really eager to make any pick in that game. Looking at the Titans and the Eagles, one of the more competitive games on the slate, hopefully, anyway, on paper, certainly. And A.J. Brown revenge game, that might be the headliner here. We will see how his replacement, Traylon Burks, continues to build on momentum. But although the Titans have gotten Burks going a little bit in the slot, they're going to probably put Slay on him pretty much every time he's outside. So the more you see of Burks in the slot, the better for the Titans and Burks, not just because it's a way to get away from Slay, but it's also a way to specifically against the slot corner, who I believe is still Josiah Scott. Even if Avante Maddox is back, that's still a great matchup for Burks because Burks is so much bigger than those guys. But Slay realistically is not letting Burks do anything when he's lined up outside. And presumably guys like Westbrook Akeem can't do anything reliable, nothing predictable here. So for the Titans offense, it's going to come down to, of course, Derrick Henry, whether he can get going. And they probably need a little bit more, too. They probably need, like, Cooper stepping up a little bit, which he might. He's been getting going a little bit lately. Definitely think he's got something to offer them as a pass catcher. But I don't know if it's realistic, and indeed the spread kind of implies this at 4.5 Eagles after opening at 5.5. Don't know if we can bank on the Titans getting that something else that they need, because it's either Burks or it's Hooper, and there's ways both of those guys could go wrong. There's ways for Tannehill to get flustered by the Eagles pass rush. Oh, there's John. Is that you, John?
I think so. Can you hear me?
Oh, okay. There's John. Yeah, so I was just saying, John, I was just kind of talking about how the Titans kind of need someone like Hooper or Burks to step up a little bit, and they might, but it's kind of like a narrow path. Whereas with the Eagles, you got the auto production from the AJ Brown revenge game. Probably not running on the Titans, but Jalen Hurts can run from broken. Oh, now we got John freezing with a horrified look on his face. Maybe it restarted again. John's going to pop up, stop in, head back out, I guess, as the show goes on. But I'll just keep blithering about these games. The Eagles, I think, should be fine in this game. 4.5 points, if I had to call it, I'd say they cover that. Just because Shane Steichen is doing a really good job. The Titans' defense does present certain challenges, but the main way that the Titans' defense hurts you usually has something to do with Jeff Simmons ruining your day, which he could still do here, but the Eagles' offensive line might be the best in the league. So while Simmons can kind of ruin anybody's day, it's probably it's probably least likely to occur against the Eagles. And while the Eagles might not be able to run from their base looks for base functions, they should, if necessary, get Jalen Hurts to make the big play in on a passing and a drop back. And Hurts otherwise should be pretty clear as a passer. Like, the Titans might throw some confusing looks his way, but even when he's getting stopped by the defense, it seems to me like Hurts is recognizing that he's been blocked. He's not getting caught off guard by the coverage and then also making an ill-advised throw. It's like, even when he's caught off guard, he keeps it together, and in this case, he'd ideally kind of look at his scrambling options. He's going to have to put that offense on his back a little bit in this one, but I think he's ready for it. I think he's shown by now that he's not afraid, at the very least, of putting the offense on his back. So it's, in a way, it's going to be Jalen Hurts versus Derrick Henry. I think with the Eagles having the better pass defense of the two, the home field advantage, certainly better offensive play calling between the two teams, I'll take the Eagles to cover that, and Hurts probably has. I think Hurts could have one of his bigger games of the year. The AJ Brown part seems almost automatic. I don't know what they can do. I don't know what the Titans can do about that, and indeed most teams. Trying to check in with John real quick for you guys. He did get another phantom restart, so he'll be back in a little bit. In the meantime, I'm going to pick some other game. I guess, Cleveland-Houston, what can you say? Deshaun Watson, if he doesn't have the Vanderjagt yips, he's probably going to be good right away. And he's got help. I mean, Amari Cooper's already doing a good job. And Kevin Stefanski's play calling has probably been at least decent this year. And the Houston defense doesn't have a whole lot going for it. I mean, I don't know if Stingley's going to be back for this game, but it probably doesn't matter whether he is. Amari Cooper's too technically proficient to let a rookie slow him down, or, you know, aside from maybe Sauce Gardner, he's not going to let a rookie slow him down, especially with Deshaun Watson throwing the passes now. I guess it's possible that they take a week or two to get on the same page. Like, maybe it's a little hasty for me to assume Cooper gets better with Watson in week one than he does with Brissett after working with Brissett all this time. But still love this setup for basically anyone who might get usage in the Cleveland offense, be it Cooper, Donovan Peoples-Jones, obviously the running backs could go nuts, Houston's run defense being as bad as it is. Kyle Allen on the other side, I don't know what you can say. Did they bench him yet? They should bench him and go back to Mills. Who cares? Kyle Allen's really bad. The Cleveland defense has its issues, especially against the run, and I'd say their pass defense isn't as good as it could be, but I just don't know if that matters against Kyle Allen. Just doesn't. He just isn't good enough to play. So Dameon Pierce might be able to, the rookie wall kind of fell on him the past couple weeks. Some of that has to do with really bad matchups, though, and this matchup is, scoring trajectory aside, very favorable for Dameon Pierce because the Browns can't stop anybody on the ground. It looks like John has woken back up from his second nap of the show. John, how are you feeling today?
Oh, absolutely terrible. Sorry about that, folks.
I'm sorry, folks, by the way, for having to talk so much. It's got to be unpleasant.
The joys of live streaming, and it's great when you also get a bunch of notification sounds. Anyway, I'm on my backup computer. This is just dandy.
Sorry, man.
but no, football is about being gritty, and so is podcasting. You know,
you have to adjust in game.
That's what we did. Our starter went out. We thought he could come back in. He can't. He likes to just kind of randomly power off. Pretty good. But if I heard you correctly, you were diving into Texans Browns.
Yeah, I'd say I'm pretty much done with it. I mean, I said Watson's probably going to be good. You know, you like all the Browns players on offense, and I said Kyle Allen sucks, and Dameon Pierce is good.
Yeah, I mean that about sums it up. I guess my last lingering question on the Browns is, as we get Deshaun Watson back in the fold here, any interest in Anthony Schwartz moving forward as like a depth option, or is he more DFS only?
I don't think he's anything really. I mean, he's interesting as a prospect, but he's still a raw prospect. Like, I think he just turned 22 like a month ago. So he's been in the league a long time, but he was one of the very youngest players in his class. And you knew with him coming out of Auburn that he was raw. Like, he was more track athlete trying to become a receiver. Like, maybe he eventually gets to, Marquise Goodwin kind of level, or ideally something better. But even Marquise Goodwin took a few years, spending less time on track, more on football. And eventually the abilities started to play up a little bit. But in the meantime, I don't think Schwartz is even going to play more snaps than David Bell. Like, I think David Bell's usually their main slot guy, at least when Cooper's lined up outside in a three wide. So I like Schwartz a little bit, but he's like a long-term, modest yield kind of asset even then.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure he had the exciting play last week. So I wanted to.
He is fast. And he's got something. Like, he's not a bum in my opinion, but he's just so young, and he's started playing that much track. Like, you're going to come into football with less attention to detail than the other guys who don't do track.
No, that's true. He does have, basically world-class speed, but, that doesn't always translate on the gridiron. All right, before we move on to our next game, let's hit some ad reads. We got a message from our friends over at Picket. Picket is a social bet tracking app that takes out all the hassle of tracking your bets and performance over time. Picket connects every major U.S. sportsbook, that's DraftKings, FanDuel, and others, and DFS pick'em providers like PrizePicks, Underdog, Thrive Fantasy, and more. Once you hook up all your sportsbooks, Picket does all the heavy lifting to slice and dice your betting data. You'll get detailed historical P&L, graphs, breakdowns by team, sport, player, and bet type, and more. You can also line shop for the best odds across your linked sportsbooks to make sure you're getting the most bang for your buck. When your bets are live, you can track the scores and stats of the games you've bet on, as well as get player prop updates for the most major player prop markets. No more switching between your sportsbook app and different score apps. By far, the biggest differentiator is that Picket syncs history and bets from all legal major sportsbooks. There is no manual entry required to track your bets. Once you have your accounts linked, it's effortless from there. The social feed and community is what turns Picket from just a bet tracking app to a home for betting, where you can learn from others, see what others are doing, and verified content to inform your betting decisions. Visit Picket.com. That's PIKKIT.com to download the Picket app today. And we also got a message from our friends over at Monkey Knife Fight. Football is officially back on Monkey Knife Fight with all the NFL action you're looking for. And if college football is more your speed, they've got plenty of that too. On Monkey Knife Fight, There's no sharks, no salary caps, and no math. It's just easy to play, easy to win daily fantasy player props. Join now at monkeyknifefight.com and you'll get your first game free. Then use promo code RWNFL to get your first deposit matched instantly up to $100. So what are you waiting for? Join Monkey Knife Fight today. All right, onward. So we hit the Texans Browns game as well. So and you touched on the Titans. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Correct. Yeah, I believe we're just night games.
We're into
Miami, San Francisco.
So we've got Miami, San Francisco. We've got the Chiefs, Bengals. But before we hit those, let's quickly get Rams, Seahawks in here. Seahawks 7-point favorites on the road against a Rams team that is just kind of playing out the string.
Yeah, I could see the Seahawks kind of like having to grind it out a little bit on offense. Like, it wouldn't be surprising if the Rams played decent enough defense, but their offense, I don't know what you can say. It's like if Bryce Perkins doesn't have, are they back to Wolford? Sorry, I should have looked that up. Bryce Perkins is fast, so he can make the long run, but he can't throw. And Wolford probably can't really do either, I guess, even if it is Wolford. So, yeah, as long as Geno doesn't have somehow his first bad game of the year, I don't know how the Seahawks blow it, but I guess the cover is a separate question.
Yeah, 7 points. The Seahawks can obviously be a little bit volatile from week to week. Did not see that Raiders result coming last week, of course, that type of thing. But I think the Rams are just so cooked at this point that that even with that, like, they couldn't cover last week when the Chiefs were like hardly trying. So I'm just so out on the Rams.
It's a preseason team.
Yeah, it's pathetic.
This is week four preseason.
It's heinous. So yeah, I think that this sets up extremely well for the Seahawks. Would you have any interest in like stacking the Seahawks as a result for DFS purposes, or are you stopping short of that?
I don't know. They're unlikely to have much urgency pushing the offense toward like aggressive plays. You know, they might just play a submission hold strategy from the start and just kind of accept a couple non-scoring drives and just sort of say like, yeah, we're confident that once we get Walker to 15 carries and get Homer to, you know, 5 carries, that you guys are going to be pretty much done for at that point. And it's probably a bet that, you know, would be smart enough to make. So I don't know why they would even show that much playbook. Like, if they do, I think they'll get to a quick lead and then reel in the playbook from that point. Like, I doubt they'll really drive up anyone's numbers in this setting.
Okay. All right. Good to point out, because it, you know, theoretically soft matchup, but then, like you said, they just might not have that fire under them necessarily. Unless Pete just really wants to stick it to McVay for whatever reason, which, you know, I wouldn't blame him.
He could. I do think Pete, even though he's such a nice guy, he's so psychologically smart about football that, like, he might see this as a chance. Like, I got to feed my barbarians plunder to keep them motivated and full of bloodlust for our next fight.
We're burning the boats, baby. All right. Onward. This I can't decide if this is the best game of the week or if it's Chiefs Bengals, but we got Dolphins Niners. The Niners have some concerning injuries, of course. Heavy action earlier in the week coming in on the Dolphins, and I think it's a bit reactionary. I think that the Dolphins are very good. I think that the line is about right, but I think that for the Dolphins to have been getting like 80% of the action earlier in the week, I think it's a bit, you know, obviously the Niners didn't play well last week against the Saints, but, you know, they're coming off a Monday night game that everyone was really buzzing about afterward, that the offense looked like the full potential of what that offense could look like. Obviously Elijah Mitchell goes down during the Saints game, McCaffrey a little bit iffy as well. I know rough news there. And then I think it's also kind of worth noting that, you know, that Mexico City game was at extremely high elevation, like even higher than Denver. So that there can, you know, they talk about it in baseball all the time where like the first first game or first series that the Rockies play on the road after a home set tends to be a little bit clunky. That's like the time to bet against the Rockies other than times you normally would. So I think that just it's understandable and forgivable that the Niners play the way that they did last week, and they still, you know, would they register a shutout?
Yeah.
So I still feel good about the Niners in this spot. And despite all that action, like none of the fantasy projections for this week are really glowing for the Dolphins guys. So, and if the Dolphins offense isn't clicking, then I think that they're in trouble.
Yeah. So I think Mike McDaniel has been exceedingly impressive, like one of the most impressive new coaches, I guess, like since McVay, something like that. And even going back a long way, I think McDaniel has been about as good as anybody. So I think he's the kind of guy who's going to figure out just about everything eventually. It's just to compete with a team like the 49ers, especially in like the stakes of this current situation, you need to have a lot of ammo to work with, and you need to have like a finished product. And I know that they're way ahead of the projections in some parts of their rebuild, and to the point that you could say like the rebuild is over, but they could still improve in a lot of clear ways that the 49ers have already shored up. Like the 49ers are a couple steps further in their, like, you know, armament. They're like the way they've built up themselves is a couple phases ahead of where the Dolphins are. So I view it as like the Dolphins can win, of course. Like they're a good team, and despite various limitations, like they have a really good coach on their side, and that really does mean a lot. It means like better than most teams can kind of anticipate, stay a little bit ahead of the adjustments that might be necessary. It's like a slower coach than McDaniel would get hit in the face with really bad results before they would, and it might take multiple weeks of failure before they get the hint and need to make a change. Whereas I think McDaniel's the kind of guy who's more likely to always wonder what he needs to change next and try to stay a little bit ahead of it rather than, you know, repeatedly be caught in panic phases. So with that said, the Dolphins offense has a couple dependencies that are becoming clear in the way that they work. And I think there might be a harsh adjustment ahead. They'll counter adjust and get out of it. But specifically, Tua Tagovailoa is relying on a lot of these like in breaking routes in the middle of the field at not particularly high depths. And that's something that you see open up in the presence of like a really well-established run game. So in a game where Wilson's going or Mostert's going, whoever, they can set that play up, especially after the run threat's been established, because the defense needs to kind of bite toward it. They can't just keep letting Mostert get 8 to 10 yards or Wilson get 5 to 6 yards. They have to do something about that. And if they do, it usually comes at the expense of that middle of the field underneath coverage. And particularly with speed like Hill and Waddle, it's just really tough to stop. And if they get that ball, they're so tough to stop after the catch too. But if some defense finds some way, and D'Amico Ryans is kind of the first guy I would put on the list of suspects for this. If anybody figures out a way to stop that run game and can neutralize the run without biting on that one look, then, and instead put like a robber in the middle of the field, like you might see Tua go to make some throw here that's been just like money all year, and Jimmy Ward might just step in front of it, and Tua might be wondering like, well, what the hell happened? And they'll go look on the tape and figure it out, and then the next time they see it, they'll be ready. But this time, I don't know. I take the 49ers. I mean, I think they are clearly a more well-stocked team. Terron Armstead's out too, isn't he? So that's even without I hate the Elijah Mitchell injury, by the way, and I think it's such bad luck that guy's had. Like, he never got hurt at Lafayette, and he's had like 3 different types of minor but still substantial knee injuries. It's like a different way every time. I think Jordan Mason, though, is good enough. I saw that some people were saying pick up Tyrion Davis Price. It's like, I don't know, whatever, I guess, sure. But
Jordan pick up Mason, Trey Sermon while you're at it. Oh, wait.
Yeah, Jordan Mason is better than Tyrion Davis Price is the thing that I think some people might not understand. Like, I bet there's a bad fantasy analysis out there somewhere that's like, well, Jordan Mason's a special teams player, which is why he was active over Tyrion Davis Price. But Tyrion Davis Price has a third round draft capital. Tyrion Davis Price should have undrafted draft capital. He's not as good as Mason. So it's going to be Mason or it's going to be nobody or Debo. And that's how I see it. But I also think the 49ers defense, I think they're going to get one of Tua's worst games in a while. Not for things so much that he can control even really. It's just that D'Amico Ryans is really tough. And without Armstead, the pass blocking could be a new problem that Tua just hasn't really had to deal with this year in particular.
Yeah, so I'm all in on the Niners this week. I think that this is a really good spot for them. I think it's going to be a really good game, and I hope that the Dolphins offense...
Armstead might be back for the 49ers after like 2.5 months.
That would be massive, even if he's playing just, you know, kind of a limited snap count. That'd be a big, big addition to them. So, yes, in on the Niners in this one. Let's keep going here. We got the Bengals Chiefs AFC Championship rematch. You're seeing this at Chiefs -2, -2.5, depending on which book you're using. I was very impressed by the Bengals last week going into Tennessee and getting the win. It's not that I didn't think that they could, but I just wasn't sold that they actually would go ahead and go into Tennessee and get the win. Tennessee been a little bit better on the road than at home this year, but even still, you know, to play a team that loves to drag you into the mud like the Titans do and be able to still kind of have that success that they did on offense, without Jamar Chase, no Joe Mixon. I mean, that's impressive stuff from Cincinnati. So I think that they give Kansas City all they could handle here. But you could also argue that the Kansas City Chiefs are the best team in football. So this one's really tricky for me.
They might be the best team, but it's also a weak year. Like there's a lot of really bad football being played, and even the so-called good teams have like weirdly problematic point differentials. So I don't know. We'll see. I think Lou Anarumo doesn't really get much chatter, but I think he's quietly done a pretty I think he's done a really good job as the Bengals defensive coordinator. Like sometimes they have the rough spots, but I don't think the personnel is great or anything. And yet they get good results pretty reliably. And Anarumo is one of those defensive coordinators who this is something really difficult to define, let alone like quantify or anything. But he seems to me like one of those guys who has that sort of momentary ability to kind of like rise to unique circumstances and come up with a 1 week game plan that has, you know, really important results for a high stakes game, but doing it in a way that you wouldn't like anticipate based on their, you know, splits or anything like that, looking at their tendencies blitz wise or, you know, results in situations of whatever sort. It's like he has like a pretty good ability to scout. I guess it must come down to like scouting the opponent and accommodating a certain game plan to adjust to that personnel that you're seeing. And that includes, of course, last year against Mahomes. It's like, I guess in the second half, especially,
yep,
it adjusted in some way. I can't remember what it would have been, but they did something in the second half and Mahomes was just flummoxed. Basically, he couldn't figure out anything that second half. And I think that's something Anarumo can do and not many defensive coordinators can. Now, doing that without Shadobia Awuzie, I don't know. Granted, I guess the Chiefs don't have the receiver personnel that they did in recent years, so they're not as likely to threaten the replacement for Awuzie, especially when they had Tyreek. But that's still such a huge loss. I don't know. I feel like losing Awuzie against Mahomes is almost just like, that's it. Like, you can't really do, because you're going to have to put four corners on the field a lot. And I don't even know who their fourth corner is. So he might be okay. I think Anarumo will have not necessarily like a winning game plan, but about as good of one as he can realistically put together. And that might not be enough to beat Mahomes even still, but it makes it less than like a slam dunk, you know. With the Chiefs, there's usually certain things you can bank on, especially as it relates to Mahomes. And I don't know if you can quite put as much certainty on it against Anarumo, at least given the recent results between the two. And since I think Anarumo has done a pretty good job for years, actually.
Yeah, no, clearly. And that was obviously the big story coming out of the AFC Championship game a year ago. And then on the other side, let's presume that Mixon and Chase are back in the fold. You know, how well do we think that this Cincy offense can kind of match what Kansas City does?
So I think it was a recent episode of ours or on the radio, but I was talking to somebody about how I thought, like, Tyler Boyd, clearly a good player, but he almost doesn't seem to fit Burrow that well. Like, I think Boyd is a guy who doesn't create a ton of separation and more so just does the little things right as a receiver and accumulates little tiny advantages over the defense. Like, that kind of player is better used by a strong arm quarterback who can zip it really quickly with those small openings. Whereas Burrow, I think, kind of needs to set up loftable trajectories to his passes. Like, he just doesn't have much zip. So I think while Boyd is overqualified as their third receiver, and in theory, he should be able to step up when Ja'Marr Chase gets hurt, I don't know if he actually can with Burrow. Like, his numbers didn't get any better for it anyway. It's like Burrow just kind of started running more, really. Mm-hmm. And that might continue because Burrow is, you know, another year removed from that ACL, and he was running quite a lot at LSU, actually. So he can keep doing that. But either way, the return of Chase would be a huge, it renegotiates the entire picture for that offense, just in general. And in a matchup like this, too, it might be even more the case because the Chiefs, they're getting good results from these three rookie corners they're running outside. Like, they got Lajarius Sneed. He plays everywhere, but he has, like, sole ownership of the slot or pretty close to it. While outside, they're running Trent McDuffie, who he's probably pretty good. He might be really good, but at 5'10 or whatever he is with short arms, he can't really deal with these tall, rangy receivers like T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. So if Ja'Marr Chase is back, and if he's even like 85% of what he usually is, that still constitutes an upgrade over Boyd, and he's running against rookie corners. Like, it doesn't matter how good these guys. I think Jalen Watson looks pretty impressive, and I haven't had a chance to look at Josh Williams that much, but he could be really good. They're getting good enough results with both of those guys playing a lot of snaps, but three rookies and the best one, the most polished in the meantime of the three, is a short guy with short arms. So that's particularly a problem against Higgins, and it's also a problem against Chase. And the Chiefs, I know Steve Spagnuolo sometimes comes up with good game plans himself, but like, he really needs one here because you just can't win. I just can't imagine how over a long sample you win reliably with rookie corners, especially like two of them being day three types going against receivers like Higgins and Chase.
Right. That could end up being the big storyline, especially when the Bengals have the ball. So I'll be paying close attention to how those guys are holding up because, I mean, I don't know if it gets much better than the top three guys there in Cincinnati out wide. Let's run through these last handful of games here. One more afternoon game and a couple of nighters. We got Chargers, Raiders. Raiders have won two in a row. We got an over under 50.5. The Chargers just always seem to play down to their opponent for whatever reason, no matter who's the coach, no matter who's
boy.
It's that's maddening. Not even against the Cardinals could they cover. Unbelievable.
I think to be fair to Soy Boy, like that was a pretty dangerous game going to deal with the Cardinals just as they get Marquise Brown back and you know, Kyler Murray. But yeah, they should have won the game, so it's good, I guess, that they did what they were supposed to do. Whether they can do that 2 weeks in a row, that's where I get a little anxious. But the Raiders, Josh Jacobs can't possibly be as good as his numbers have been, but man, has he been good this year.
Yeah.
In such a way that the Chargers have to have a lot of reason to worry here, because if Josh Jacobs can do the things he's done this year, then why wouldn't he run all over the Chargers? It's hard to think of it. It's hard to think of how it could go wrong. But even if Nate Hobbs is back, and Nate Hobbs has been really good the last 2 years for the Raiders at corner, if he's back, and let's just say he more or less neutralizes Keenan Allen, Josh Palmer's, I think, been good enough, especially because the defense tends to leave him, you know, correctly so, they leave him as like the third or fourth concern in among the route runners. He is winning in that context, and the Raiders' outside corners are probably enough below average that he can be the wide receiver two for a week and do a good enough job, especially if Eckler is doing what he usually does. So I do worry a little bit about, I mean, Devontae has been, with the exception of the Saints game, where I really do think those guys all had COVID that week and just played through it. He's been just insane. He's been as good as he's been in Green Bay, basically. So if he's giving kind of automatic returns on that level, the Raiders will be competitive and could even win, especially if Jacobs keeps producing like he has. But I'll take the Chargers. I just don't feel good about it.
Yeah, they're a team that you side with, but you know, you almost never feel good about it for whatever reason.
He's our Marino, and I know a lot of people don't want to. A, people underrate Marino, and B, they underrate Herbert, but it's true. He's so good. It gives me pause, even though to pick against this team. I mean, even though I think the rest of the team around him pretty much sucks.
It sure does. Let's go. Colts Cowboys.
Colts Cowboys. Suck. Cowboys roll.
That's pretty much where I'm at with this one as well. I don't think a whole lot needs to be added there, frankly. Indianapolis is just in deep trouble. Let's finish it out. Saints Bucks. We got a question about this game from our guy Big Trev. Big Trev wants to know: would you start Kamara or Rashad White? It sounds like Lenny is going to play. Lenny, of course, being one Leonard Fournette.
It's not as easy of a pick as I thought it'd be, but I would still go with Kamara. I mean, Rashad White's fine. He was a good pick where they took him, but he, to me, even in theory, was never supposed to be a starting running back. And Fournette, he's got his issues or whatever, but he was giving them returns better than White before he got hurt and before he had his ridiculous visa episode or passport. I don't know that stuff. Anyway, Fournette is still better than White. It's just like White's a good complementary player that the Buccaneers feature, whereas the Saints offense can't get to step one without Kamara.
And then, you know, I'm with you on Kamara in this spot. As far as this game is concerned, I know that the Saints are really bad. And I know that earlier this year, I think a lot of people, you know, felt like, oh, even though that they're not good, they always seem to give the Bucs a lot of trouble. And I faded that the first go round. I think I'm going to buy in on it this time because I think the Bucs are worse than I thought that they were going to be when they beat the Saints earlier this year in New Orleans. And it's also past Tommy Boy's bedtime with it being a Monday night game. So I think that the Saints somehow cook up a way to keep this one close.
Yeah. So after Tom gets his senior discount at the Old Town Buffet, he might at the very least let the Saints cover, but you're right. I really thought the Buccaneers would be better this year than they are. And it's been like a month and a half now that, of course, following some preceding disappointing game, I'm like, well, they'll start to figure it out now. And maybe there's just only a certain amount you can figure things out with a 45-year-old quarterback. And not to put it all on Brady, they have truly had a lot of other difficulties. But man, there are some plays where you see with Brady throwing the ball where you think like, oh man, he's injecting stem cells on the sideline. Like he's doing, you know, black magic on the sideline. And then there's other plays where he gets the slightest bit of pressure and you're like, that's a 45-year-old man. And it's like that second case is happening enough that it's at the very least throwing off like the vision that I had in my head. The vision I had in my head is, you know, Mecca Tom Brady, 45 years old and made of mostly machine parts, is like throwing to all these wide open guys, and he has all day, like a couple of years ago, and it's just like, I guess a couple of years ago is gone now, and it's just not coming back. And the Saints suck, so I don't want to, like, I don't want to make it sound like the Buccaneers can't win a game. They can win a game against most teams. It's just, I thought they'd be the NFC Super Bowl team, and they're not. They're not going to be that. So I think I'll take the Saints to cover, just because that 2.5-point swing is a little bit nauseating for me to think on. But admittedly, I have no idea how they're going to, like, score a point, let alone cover.
No, it's, they're going to have to really, like, just dominate with defense, hope that they can get a defensive score of some kind, or some sort of fluky Taysom Hill outcome. But
it's been a while. It's been a little while since we went, like, Taysom, you little jerk, you know. So maybe it's time for one of those days.
Yeah, there's parallels here. You know, there's like that volcano in Hawaii that hasn't erupted in a long time earlier this week. Like, maybe, like, that's the star sign for Taysom.
We need one of these analytics bodies needs to get serious and start providing us in volcano splits and out of volcano splits, so that we know who we can count on this week.
Thank you. Okay, so put those spreadsheet skills to use, somebody out there, please.
Do some work for once, you guys.
Crying out loud. We've got one last question here from our guy, Brian. Superflex League, would you start Trevor Lawrence, Mike White, or Jared Goff this week? I think it's Lawrence for me.
It's definitely not White for me. I do give Goff a little more consideration than I thought I would, but I go with Lawrence, yeah.
All right. That'll do it for us. Trevor Lawrence, the man. That's the big takeaway pod. That and the machines are conspiring against me, but we prevailed. We finished the stream. We did the dang thing. Thank you for your patience during that little snafu. But that's going to do it for us here on the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, again, presented by our friends over at No House Advantage. For Mario Puig, I'm John McKechnie. Thanks for listening.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.